Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Dobrý večer and welcome to the Bohemican Podcast with Pete Coleman and Travis Dowe.
Dobrý večer and welcome to the Bohemican Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Coleman.
And I'm Travis Dowe from the History of Alchemy Podcast.
Superstitions and legends bind the Czech people together on so many levels here in the Czech Republic. And tonight's episode, we will shed some light on one particular destination that combines fact, fiction, and superstition. Our destination tonight is Huska Castle. Now, Travis, you and I made this road trip to the castle, and it was a very interesting trip. The historical documentation on this castle is really quite limited in the English language, and it is really kind of far off the beaten tourist path.
When you say off the beaten path, it was like basically in the middle of nowhere, which is, you know, one of the interesting things of it. It wasn't near any borders. It wasn't near any trade routes. What makes the location kind of unique is that it was built on top of this huge like fissure in it, or like a big crack basically in the sandstone, and they supposedly at the time they couldn't even figure out how deep the sandstone went, like how deep the crack went, and so they built this castle on top of it sometime in the 9th century, possibly earlier. So there's a chronicler, Hayek, recounts a legend, which is basically the story of this strange crack, and it's really at the top of a hill, and at the time when it was built, now there's kind of a smoother access, but it was really like, you know, this top of this hill, and then cliffs on all the sides.
And Travis, I'll interject real quick. We drove up to the top. It's you're actually supposed to walk it, park at the base of this limestone hill, and you know, we were allowed to actually drive up a little bit further because of our cool access pass that we had to be able to go up to the top. And so as we're driving the car up the hill, it was pretty steep, you know, and we found out later that it wasn't always that that accessible for people.
Yeah,
to get up
it
there.
Used to just be cliffs. So, but that's later in the history, according to this legend by Hayek. The site was known for kind of these strange visitations, and local residents started calling it the Hole to Hell because, you know, like I said, they couldn't even tell how deep it was. And the villagers started to kind of avoid the whole area, especially after dark. They believed that, you know, there was strange creatures living there, half animal, half human, that would, you know, come out of this portal, this crack in the rock. And there was reports, maybe coincidentally, no one knows, of like missing livestock or dead livestock. And another belief associated with this, that if anybody went too close to the site at night, that there was a possibility that they themselves could be turned into one of these creatures, you know, of the pit. And I guess, you know, the natural thing to do is maybe try to fill in the hole, right? You like just throw rocks in it and try to fill it in, but everything they dumped in, it just kind of plummeted to the bottom and was swallowed, and, you know, there was no visible effect.
You know, Travis, your wife came with us on this trip as well, and I think she had the same experience we all had with this, was that it was a few days before Halloween that we went up there. So actually I had a lot of tourists up there trying to see something,
you know, time for that.
Superstitious, occult-like, and I think it was a perfect fall day to check this out. The castle itself has been pretty well taken care of for being a castle with such older roots. But the one thing that really stood out to me on this tour was the fact that you go in and you see this courtyard inside that had a well in the middle of it, but it was a very dark feeling to this place. It wasn't like some of these other castles we talked about on Bohemican, such as alabaster sort of castles that kind of shine on a cliff. This one was very dark, square, square-like, very Baroque in a lot of senses. It kind of stood as a very creepy place in a lot of respects.
And that's not all. So when you mentioned the courtyard, probably the most interesting thing about this castle is that it's an inside-out castle. So the defenses are towards the inside of the courtyard, which means it's more towards, you know, more aimed at something to keep something in rather than keep something out.
And that right there spooked me out a little bit.
Yeah, that's strange.
The tour guide said that was like, my ears perked up on that one. But something that was very unique that we had mentioned in previous Bohemian podcasts when talking about Huska Castle is the fact that whenever there's something that needs to be sanctified or have a balance of good versus evil, at least in Bohemia, you put a chapel on it, right? So if you can imagine this deep fissure in the 9th century that opened up that caused all this turmoil among the locals, it could have been something as simple as maybe a heat vent or something along those lines.
Oh yeah,
that caused some birds to die, you know, or cause cattle to die because of asphyxiation. But to them, at this time, I would say it was probably, like they said, a gateway to hell. So therefore, let's build a chapel on it. If we can't fill up this fissure with rocks and other debris, let's see if we can sanctify it to God. And that's exactly what we saw on the very first part of this tour was this chapel. And Travis, when you went inside this chapel, the frescoes that are on the side of the wall are some of the oldest frescoes in Central Europe. Or at least in Bohemia, they all had some very interesting representations of the battle between good and evil.
So they covered the crack with these big, thick stone plates, and then the castle's chapel was constructed, like you said, and then it was dedicated to the archangel Michael, who was, you know, the leader of God's armies and, you know, the fighting
makes
angel.
Makes complete sense. The left hand of God was going to be there to defend it.
So these frescoes you mentioned are possibly as early as the 1400s, or most likely as early as the 1400s, and they depict Michael in two scenes. In one, he's fighting a dragon, which, you know, like, think of symbol of evil, Lucifer, or something like that. In the other scene, he holds a sword in one hand and a set of scales in the other, and he's weighing the souls at the Last Judgment. Another thing that's shown is the crucifixion. And also St. Christopher, who I might point out is the patron saint of alchemists. Maybe the most interesting thing, there's a completely unique fresco there. And it's kind of this creature. It's an upper body of a woman, lower body of a horse. So think like centaur or something. But she's holding a bow in her right hand. So she's a left-handed shooter, basically. And with the left, she's aiming an arrow at a human figure. This is a completely unique fresco period. It's the only female centaur left-handed archer ever in existence as a fresco. And who knows what that means or if it has some symbolism behind it. But there are some stories that the site could predate Christianity in Bohemia. So if you go back all the way back to the 9th century, that's before Christianity by at least a century. So it's possible. So some people think that this fresco of the centaur is kind of linked to the gateway to hell, that she's like coming from it. You know, it has to do with these myths of, like we mentioned before, half animal, half human creatures that would come out of the gateway to hell. So it's a really interesting sight.
So Travis, as you mentioned, the entrance to the underworld it has a lot of legends connected to this with Huska Castle. As we previously mentioned, this 17th century, at the time of the Thirty Years' War, there was a period when the castle really stood on guard, and it was taken over by the Swedish commander by the name of Aranto, and he made his headquarters there. Now, what makes this interesting is that Aranto was known to dabble in black magic. He had some connections to alchemy as well as performed really sketchy experiments within the walls of this castle. So that kind of added more to the darkness that you see there. Not only this, but during the time of Ronto's occupation, his soldiers became a terror on the local villagers and created some unspeakable crimes. His comeuppance kind of came in a very interesting way as well. He was struck in the middle of the night and shot through a window, supposedly as he was working on his laboratory to discover the elixir of eternal life, Travis, which is interesting on the alchemy podcast that you and I do. The elixir of life is part of the sorcerer's stone. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So something that was sought after not only to make gold but to prolong one's life.
So it was an alchemist lab too.
Alchemist lab as well.
There you go.
So that another reason why we had to make this trip. Yeah. Right. So I thought it was very, very interesting that when you talk about Bohemia and you talk about the 30 Years' War, almost everything that was here of substance was sacked by the Swedes when they came in, or taken over or sacked. Huska Castle was no exception to this. And so you have that kind of really eerie feeling of Oronto being there performing these probably really desperate acts on people.
Yeah.
And so that adds to it as well.
You could go even further back, because some of the legends are actually from the area or live in the castle itself. We mentioned the Hold of Hell, but there's also archaeological evidence of Celtic inhabitation of this area dating way back into antiquity, and then Slavic tribes migrating in the 6th century. So it's an interesting area by itself. And then we mentioned that the first, possibly a small wooden fort on that same kind of precipice on top of the cliff there, the first known structure could have actually been a small wooden fort that stood there all the way back in the 9th century. So again, the stone one is from the 13th century, so this is, you know, centuries before that. And again, this is before Christianity, so it is a pretty old site.
You know, we talked about the 17th century. We've moved into the 30 Years' War in the 18th century. Now, you know, let's take a look at the mid 19th century. Already, this place has got some on the creep meter pretty high that people want to take a trip out here to really experience that. And that's exactly what the famous Czech poet Karl Heinrich Macha did by spending the night in Huska Castle. And he actually had some interesting sort of dreams while he was there. And one seemed a little bit prophetic. So one thing that I felt that was really interesting on the tour was that we talked about this letter that Macha had actually sent to his friend Edward Hindle. And Macha described his soul in this dream descending into a pit and then being transported into a hellish, mechanized future. Hint, hint. So he actually thought it would be Prague, you know, in the 21st century, where he wandered in horror and despair, it is said. Among other unnerving experiences in this vision, Macha had wrote to his friend that he met a small girl that showed him moving pictures in a small casket or maybe a coffin. What could that be?
Interesting. Yeah.
Right? And the scene, he was walking through the darkness in these cliffs, riddled with holes, projected an eerie yellow light, uncannily similar to modern Shalishta, which I don't know exactly where that is, but something that he had a connection with of seeing the future.
Kind of, it's an area of kind of like Panalaks.
Panalaki that we see here in Prague, right? So already he's seeing a mechanized future with groups of people living in giant buildings for conformity, and he's seeing Panalaks, this on the outskirts of Prague.
Panalaks as sandstone cliffs. Yeah,
yeah,
that's interesting.
Can you see that a little bit? So he recounted all this in 1836 to give a vision of the future. Sounds very H.G. Wells, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Right? So this was interesting that he had this viewpoint. Now, this is not the only sort of focus of the occult. Let's fast forward to the 20th century, Travis, and the Nazi occupation of Huska Castle.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because the written documentation from that period is just missing, because the SS took over the castle, and they occupied it from 1939 until 1945. And the thing is that all the records were completely destroyed. You know.
Well, you couldn't even find this place on a map. I mean, they didn't even have it on a map.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they took it off the maps.
So who knows what went on there? I know we know that there was a part of the SS that had a really keen interest in these kind of supernatural areas and phenomenon. I mean, that was a very small part of the SS, so it could just as likely have just been a remote kind of hiding place or is someone's almost like a private house. It doesn't really help to speculate, but hey, there you go. Something definitely happened there, and it is pretty interesting to note that they did occupy that. Obviously, if you let your imagination go wild, you could perhaps imagine that Himmler was interested in researching the strange connections and the occult phenomena or legends that are related to the castle. That wouldn't have been unheard of, and it wouldn't have been the only time that happened. But again, I mean, they completely destroyed all the records from the time. What is interesting is that after the war, it was necessary to clear the castle area of landmines. So it was clearly something that they did protect. Also, that's the exact reason why the current owners won't allow any excavation inside the castle to determine the existence of this supposed bottomless crack in the limestone for fear of some possible existence of undiscovered German explosives. So it's hard to say. There could be something underneath the castle still today that, you know, someday we'll see and find.
Looking around the outside of the castle before you go into the gates, we talked about we've already been on the tour on the inside, and Travis had gone around in several rooms where there were hunting trophies, of course, and there were reconstructions to kind of befit somebody with wealth in the 20th century. So, you know, we talked about the tour around the castle. There's a couple things that I wanted to mention about the surrounding areas. At the top of this hill, of course, just beyond the castle gates, you're going to see a pretty big statue to St. Lumilla.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And so there's that kind of
weird
connection.
It's in a creepy place. Just cause it's off in the woods, and this, you know, statue of this woman.
Well, yeah, you know, we went during the fall season here, and I bet you it's got another creep factor. A couple. Do we actually have a rating for creep factor in this?
A creepometer?
Yeah. That it would probably go up a little higher during the winter months when things look dead and barren, no leaves on the trees. You would kind of get that really kind of ominous sort of feel. But I think that you really get that sinking feeling when you get into the courtyard and when you go into the dungeon areas, Travis, that you see that this place still holds a lot of history to it that's negative.
They mentioned on the tour that also in the 20th century, especially the later part of the 20th century, that the area was really well known for UFO sightings, and these ufologists or whatever you call them, they were out there a few times to go investigate sightings and that kind of thing. So I didn't find anything about that, but yeah, weird. I mean, even today, like the kind of, say, younger generation occultists go out there and do their thing. So it's still an interesting kind of place.
Well,
even today.
People actually sign up for their weddings here. So I don't know if that's gonna is that a good thing to do? All right, but the tour guide actually said this, and I thought this was extremely interesting. Is that the place is owned by the descendants of the Škoda auto manufacturer.
Right.
Right. Now, if you're not familiar with the auto manufacturer here in Czech Republic, as you know, in different parts of the world, they take pride in the vehicles that they make. As far as Czech Republic goes, Škoda is their brand name. It's their car that they produced and were allowed to produce during the communist takeover. However, the castle was in disrepair at the time in the 1950s, Travis, is that what he was saying?
The Škoda family had it in the First Republic.
I see.
And then the communists took it. And then the communists did nothing with it. And then, so when they gave it to his great-grandchild or great-grandchildren or something, the first thing they had to do was totally strip it down and renovate it because communists, you know, take everything, but they don't take care of anything.
Well, and at the time, and this is a big political hot potato with a lot of people still to this day of wanting their ancestral homes and those things given. So what happened after the communists left, the Czech Republic government at the time in 1990-91 didn't necessarily want to give everything back to everybody because then the government would have nothing. So that's kind of a tug of war for a lot of landmarks and castles and locations throughout the Czech Republic. You can ask any descendants of maybe even the Rosenbergs or the Eggenbergs, you know, that they are still trying to get their hands on a few things.
You want to hear another story about this?
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's another one. There's quite a few, but there's one more that a duke of the Duba clan, he was kind of curious about the secret behind the Hold of Hell, and he had the bright idea to offer a condemned prisoner a full pardon if he would be willing to go, you know, with basically tied to a rope, be lowered down into the crack. Did you hear that story?
I did. And actually, we mentioned this on a previous podcast when we talked about
witches
and dungeons.
Yeah.
And it didn't turn out too well for the guy.
So, yeah, they lowered him down. He started screaming. And when they raised him back up, his hair turned, his hair was white and he was kind of never the same again.
He didn't live much longer after that. I mean, he actually had a heart attack after this. I don't know how much longer, but but this was an offer. I think at the time there was also something with the German occupation, the Nazi occupation, that they had something similar to this where they had offered to take prisoners that were willing to either say, hey, you know what, I could either take the wrath of the Nazi occupiers that might be shot or, you know, put in prison, concentration camp, yeah. whatnot, or I can go down this hole.
They'll let me go spelunking.
Yeah, and so I think a lot of them would at first take that chance, but I think the legends kind of continue a little bit. And you have to take everything with a grain of salt, folks. I mean, seriously, the legends here in Czech Republic are wonderful, wonderful stories.
Oh, yeah.
And they're great to tell, you know, over a fireside chat, but to say that there's a lot of truth to them would be probably stretching it. But there, as we said in the beginning of the show, there's a lot of fact, there's a lot of fiction, and wrapped up in superstition. Wrapping up the program tonight on this Destination episode of Huska Castle, we can take a look that this castle is not quite what you would have seen in the 9th century. It's much more accessible now than it ever has been, and we can thank who for that?
Yeah, that would be Ferdinand III. After the 30 Years' War, he wanted it to be less defensible, which makes sense. It's not near any border, so he wouldn't, you know, he just wanted it to be more of like a hunting house, kind of hunting chateau, if you will. So yeah, instead of a defensible fortress in the middle of his country, that
right.
doesn't make any sense.
And so no longer you don't have to get your rock climbing shoes together to climb up this limestone little mini mountain.
You would have
just actually drive or walk up there.
It would
pretty
have been
easily.
Way cooler before to yeah. see it up on the.
I think it would have.
And the other castle we drove by is still kind of like that. It's way up on that hill and pretty steep.
Bezdež.
Yeah,
Bezdež is on. If you head for from Prague, there's several ways you can go, but the quicker way, and it still took us about an hour and 15 minutes driving.
Oh, because of traffic.
Traffic, yeah. But if you head towards Mladá Boleslav, which is towards the northeast of Prague, for about an hour or so, and then you kind of jet up
yeah,
a little bit there.
There's a lot of neat stuff in that area.
There really is, yeah. And you don't have to go too far. You pass Mladá Boleslav, and you'll see Bezdež. Right there at the very top of the hill, it's a beautiful ruin of a castle. You head west from there through these winding little roads through cornfields and a couple little villages, and you're there. You actually see it. So
yeah.
We really recommend going there. I think it's worth doing and taking the tour. Privately owned, so you're going to have to probably do some research about when it's open and the months that it's open. The fee is nominal to get in.
But inside-out castle. I mean, that's
inside-out castle.
See.
Because yep. it's got to protect whatever secrets it's holding from the inside out, mm-hmm. which would kind of make the hair on the back of your neck stand up a little bit.
Yep.
All right, we want to thank you so much for listening into this Destination episode on Huska Castle on the Bohemican Podcast. Be sure to tune in to our other shows coming up very soon. Thanks for listening.
Yep, thank you very much.
You have been listening to the Bohemican Podcast with Pete Coleman and Travis Dole. Visit bohemican.com for more information on this episode, other episodes, and much more information about history, traditions, and culture in the Czech Republic. Find us on iTunes, subscribe, and review, and don't forget to rate us. We would love to hear from you. Send comments, ideas, and corrections on our comments page on bohemican.com, or get in touch via Facebook or Twitter. Tune in to our sister podcast, History of Alchemy, which is also on iTunes, or on historyofalchemy.com. Until next time on the Bohemican Podcast, thank you for listening.